This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be previewing all of the Premier League action to come this weekend, which gets underway at Carrow Roads tonight on the Friday night football. It is Norwich against Watford. Big for both sides that are both down in the relegation zone. Could it be Kike Sanchez Flores' last game in charge of Watford, despite the fact that he didn't even start the season as the Watford manager? We'll be going through all of the games, including the showdown at Anfield, the final game of the weekend before the international break. It's Liverpool against Manchester City. 6 points is currently the gap between the two sides. Liverpool top, City in second. So we'll be looking forward to all of that, as well as my favourite part of the week, which is the Premier League predictions towards the end of the hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. Before we look ahead to the Premier League, just a rundown of the Europa League action, and it was a good night for the British side. 4 wins out of 4. At Old Trafford, Manchester United won 3-0 at home against Partizan Belgrade. Mason Greenwood, Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford all on the score sheet. Wolves scored a 92nd minute winner through Raul Jimenez to beat Slovan Bratislava. Ruben Neves did miss a penalty during the game. Over in Italy, a fantastic result for Neil Lennon's side. Lazio 1, Celtic 2. And also for Rangers, what an impressive couple of results against Porto. They drew over in Portugal and they won 2-0 and dominated at home against Porto, who the last two seasons have got to the Champions League knockout stages. So Steven Gerrard doing a brilliant job at Rangers, and his side doing a very brilliant job on the field. So looking ahead to all of the Premier League action this weekend, as I mentioned, it gets underway tonight at Carrow Road, Norwich against Watford. Norwich have been in a bit of free fall of recent times, lost 4 of their last 5. They come up against Watford, winless Watford, 6 points away from safety. Could Kike Sanchez Flores be losing his job? Then on to Saturday, the early kickoff, Chelsea against Crystal Palace. That is at Stamford Bridge, 12:30. Burnley take on West Ham in the first of the 3 o'clock kickoffs. Elsewhere, Newcastle play Bournemouth, Southampton play against Everton, and Tottenham are against Sheffield United. The 5:30 kickoff, Leicester take on Arsenal. We talk about managers potentially being under pressure. Could that be Unai Emery's last game in charge of Arsenal? Obviously, we head into the international break, so a time, in theory, for clubs to change their managers. Then on to Sunday, Manchester United are at home against Brighton. Wolves take on Aston Villa. And the big game of the weekend is at Anfield, 4:30 kickoff. We've had all the build-up throughout the week, and it comes at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. It's Liverpool, table toppers Liverpool on 31 points, haven't lost a game, won 10 of the 11 games. They host Manchester City, 6 points behind them. So a huge game at Anfield already. Lots has been said by both Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola ahead of the game. Manchester City have some injury concerns going into this game, including especially in goal, where Edison is a doubt. To preview this game from the Liverpool perspective, then I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonathan. There's been all this talk during the week. It's been really pointed out and highlighted from the outset of the season, from the moment the fixtures were released. How big a game is it? Everyone's been giving their different views as to whether this is where the title is decided. Some people saying it is ridiculously early to be suggesting this is where the title is going to be won or lost. Where do you sit on that debate line, Jonathan?
Yeah, it's incredible, really, isn't it? It's so early in the season, but people are talking, and there is. It's hard to disagree with the element of saying these are the games where the title will be won or lost. You go back to last season. Ultimately, it was those 11 millimetres or wherever it was at Man City where that Sadio Mane goal didn't cross the line that ultimately cost Liverpool the title. These games are so they've taken a whole new life of their own. We've already seen a manager in Pep Guardiola that was never kind of associated with the this was the dark arts of the management side of the game. But now we have seen him. We even saw him before the Community Shield. Now we see him here again with a little bit of the, I suppose, the mind games, if you want to call them that. And there's no doubt that this, whether it's, if it's too early to decide where what way the title will go, it has the potential to a 6-point lead at the moment. You know, that can go to 3 or can go to 9. Still a long way to go, but you do feel like it's going to be one of the big decisive games of the season. And if nothing else, it's going to set down a marker for the next little while, because no matter what way it goes, particularly if either side wins, they're going to push on and get that fresh bit of momentum. You've Man City win it, they're back in it again. Not that they're ever away, but they're going to have this momentum that they've been starting to build up after a little bit of wobble. The opposite end of the spectrum with Liverpool, if they push on, if they get a 9-point lead, the statement that would send out coming into an absolute hectic set of fixtures for Liverpool, but it would be massive either way. So yeah, anyway, you can't deny that this game is going to be so crucial come the end of the season.
In an interview that Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool manager, did yesterday, he was asked the question about whether this is a must win or a game that they mustn't lose. And he said it was a want to win game. Do you think privately Jurgen Klopp will be thinking, if we can come away with a point, and so long as we don't lose, actually, obviously the proof will be in the pudding come the end of the season, but actually a point on Sunday is a much better result for the home side than it is for the visitors?
It's a tough one to answer that. My own personal view is I think Liverpool will need 4 points against Man City to secure the title this season. I think it's going to be that tight. You can argue which way the win will come, if it's going to be home or away. I think privately, while he won't admit it, it's not that he's going to go gung-ho with a couple minutes to go and push everybody forward and go completely crazy. He won't risk a draw at the end, but I do think that his motivation, and he's going to look at that Man City defence in particular, and he's going to think, yes, we must not open up. Obviously, we will secure the draw, but I really think he's aiming for it, and his backroom team are really aiming to try and secure the victory here, because he spoke about, you heard him just speak recently there just a couple of minutes ago in his press conference. You can tell how motivated he is. He sent out the war cry pretty much to the fans to get everyone in nice and early, to make some noise, to be that extra advantage. I really think he's going in for, while he won't admit it publicly, I think deep down he has his eye marks on 3 points here. And I think every Liverpool fan deep down really is as well, if you ask them honestly.
Looking at Liverpool's opponents on Sunday, Manchester City, they've got a really big concern going into the game in regards to the goalkeeper situation, because Edison went off in midweek at half-time against Atalanta in the Champions League. Now, it may be one of those where it was a precaution, and a bit like the David De Gea situation going into the Liverpool-Manchester United game, where it seemed 2 days before the game he had no chance of playing, and then he played. If Edison doesn't play, how delighted will the Liverpool squad and the Liverpool coaching staff be? Because you look through the stats, not just in terms of a save percentage, but things like passing accuracy. Edison is so key to what Manchester City do, not just in terms of saving shots, but also his distribution from the back. Do you think that if it is Claudio Bravo that is stepping into goal on Sunday, do you think that's something that the starting 11 will be licking their lips at the prospect of that?
I think it's very akin, really, to the kind of the situation Liverpool had earlier in the season with Alisson getting that injury and then Adrian coming in. It's much and much as I think with Bravo as well, as I said, the comparison is very strong there to Adrian. The two of them are very good shot stoppers, so I don't think there's going to be much of a percentage drop in terms of that side of the game. But as you rightly said, it's the next couple of percentages with the passing distribution. You saw, even take Alisson last week at Villa, there was a couple of occasions where there was counter attacks over the top. Liverpool were pushed high, he was able to come in and sweep them. Edison does a similar job like that. So there is a couple more percentage of where they trust their goalkeeper a bit more, they can be a bit braver, they can push up. There's those kind of minute percentages, and there's no, you know, it's no, by no element of surprise that both Klopp and Guardiola have gone with such such with goalkeepers with such a strong positional or strong possession based style with them, because their game plans are exposed to that next level. I fully expect Edison to play, to start on Sunday. I think very much as he said, it was very much precaution. I'd be very, very shocked if he's not out there. So I don't think there's anything to worry about that side of things. Perhaps a small percentage if you see Bravo, but I think you are talking in the percentages really.
In terms of then team news for Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp has confirmed in his press conference that Jordan Henderson will be fit after suffering with illness earlier in the week. Virgil van Dijk is fit. Where are the big decisions and how do you think those will play out? Centre-back is one. Is it going to be Dejan Lovren or Joe Gomez to play alongside Virgil van Dijk? Who plays in the midfield? Fabinho is an absolute certainty, you'd think, based on what Jurgen Klopp has gone with so far this season, that it will be Henderson and Wijnaldum to accompany him. How do you think the team will line up for Liverpool on Sunday?
Yeah, ultimately, I don't think Jurgen is going to spend too long picking this team. I think this team almost picks itself, really, and I think most people are in agreement with that. I think you'll see Lovren will take the other centre-half position. You're right in Fabinho. He was rested last week so that he wouldn't avoid to avoid potential suspension for this game. So he's a dead cert. He's so vitally important. And I really think, as you said as well, he's going to shore up that midfield with an extra pace, but a bit more pace and a bit more, I suppose, defensive protection really in both sides down the flanks there, given how much Liverpool's full backs will push on. So I expect to see the midfield three of Fabinho, Henderson on the right hand side, and Gini on the left, and as the left side at number eight. I really don't see it. I'd be ultimately very, very shocked if there's any other difference to that. I think that Liverpool team, we can pretty much safely put a banker on it now. You are looking at maybe potential changes in midfield as the game progresses, depending on what way the game does progress. I feel like if Liverpool need a bit more of an attacking addition to their team, you're looking at the Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's a very good form, has a very good record against Man City as well. Potentially Naby Keita as well to come on, and then the opposite end of the spectrum really. If you, no matter what way the game goes, if there's an old guiding head to come on, you'd be looking for former Man City player James Milner to come on and potentially see a game out either way, or be that steady Eddie head. I don't see much change from that. What I do potentially see is what we've seen a couple of times. We saw it at Leicester to a certain extent earlier on in the season, where he does kind of move away from his traditional 4-3-3 to almost a 4-2-3-1 with Mohamed Salah taking the central position and Bobby kind of and Manny going either side just to drop in, just to give a bit more, I suppose, strength in midfield. And then potentially you look down the left-hand side of Man City's defence. There is potential openings there as well. So Manny played quite well on the right-hand side against Villa as well. So that's maybe something he will tweak a bit as well. Again, it's given how much it goes, because you know that Man City are probably going to completely overload midfield. They like to do that anyways, but particularly with potential defensive issues. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating tactical battle.
And just finally then, Jonathan, where do you think, if you had to pick one area, where is this game going to be won or lost? Is it going to be who dominates in midfield? Is it the front three for Liverpool being able to get in those channels between the fullbacks and the centre-backs? Is it going to be whether City can exploit the gaps left by Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson down the fullback areas for Liverpool? If you had to pick one key area where this game is going to be won and lost, where would you point it out?
Yeah, I could literally talk all day on that, to take the rest of your show on that almost. To summarise, really, I think the midfield battle is key. We know what Man City want to do, which is overload the channels, pretty much get in behind the spaces, the fullbacks push on. The same is said, really, with Liverpool. They'll want to get the ball to their front three and get in behind those half spaces as well, get at that potential weakened Man City defence. So, ultimately, it is going to be the midfield battle. Who is going to get possession of the football? Who is going to grab stranglehold of the game? Liverpool will be hoping that they can, you know, get that press going again, get the atmosphere going, get that kind of cauldron really that Jurgen Klopp had asked for really, and to get absolutely tear into tackles, get that press going, get possession of the football. Because if it's no big kind of rocket science really, whoever has most possession of the ball here has the potential to get their attack and strength to do damage to either defence. So yeah, that's really ultimately where the battle will be won or lost, I feel.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jonathan. That was Jonathan Higgins, sports broadcaster and journalist, previewing that massive game, the showdown at Anfield, Liverpool against Manchester City. Liverpool top on 31 points, Manchester City second on 25 points. It is sure to be a phenomenal game. And as Jonathan was intimating there, the tactical aspect of it is so intriguing. We could pretty much do the whole show, but that would be a little bit selfish from my point of view as a Liverpool fan to just be talking about this game. There are plenty more to come. And we're going to be getting both perspectives from the big game tonight between Norwich and Watford.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. As I mentioned, there's a huge game in the Premier League tonight to kick off the weekend before the international break. It's Norwich up against Watford at Carrow Road. And to get the Norwich perspective now, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Michael Bailey, a Norwich reporter for The Athletic. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Michael. Just put it into a bit of context. Obviously, it's a massive game for the visitors tonight, but for the home side, after a poor run ever since, really, Norwich had that fantastic result at home against City, things have gone on the slide a little bit. So how, just put it into a bit of context, Michael, how important this game is for Daniel Farke's side tonight.
Yeah, it's a huge game for both teams, as you said. I think the thing with Norwich is that there was so much optimism, I think, at the Manchester City win being a statement of what Norwich could go on to achieve. And I think ultimately it probably meant that no one was going to take them lightly again. And they've really struggled. And teams have found ways to stop Norwich playing quite easily. And Norwich have really struggled to find the ways around that. So I think the key thing at this point is that, you know, Norwich have got to find a way that is a productive way of them developing their game so they can start picking up points properly. Because if they can't do that, then they're going to be in a very big rut. And I don't think they're going to have the resource to solve it come January, when they might try to spend a little bit of money and it's not going to be much compared to everyone else. So I think just if you can say the big weight, of course, on trying to get a run, trying to get the win and get these 3 points. But when you break it down, both of these teams still, Watford will still need 10 more wins over the course of the season. So they've got to have a change in the way that the season is already looking like panning out over the early part of the season to how it's going to go on from here. And for Norwich, they've got to show a way of adapting what they're doing to counter the ways that teams are stopping them, which has been very effective, sadly, in recent weeks.
One of the big questions that's being asked going into this game is, who's under more pressure? Because Norwich are at home, and so there is that pressure in terms of the fact that if Watford were to win, Norwich would go to the bottom of the table. But at the same time, you look at it the other way around. The away side are without a win so far this season. Rumours that Quique Sanchez-Flores could lose his job potentially if he loses heavily tonight. So in your view, Michael, who do you think is under the more pressure? Is it the home side to that kind of that pressure of playing in front of your home crowd, or is it the visitors who are without a win?
Yeah, I mean, they're both swimming in it, aren't they? To be honest, it probably doesn't even matter who's under more pressure, because they both know what is at stake. And I did see the stuff about Sanchez Flores this morning as well. So, I mean, that certainly adds a dimension to it. And Watford have got obviously previous for chopping and changing if they feel it's going to help them. I think Norwich is a really interesting case, because at home there will be pressure. And I think even at Brighton, maybe at the weekend, you can sense from some fans, probably more individually than collectively, it's horrible seeing your side just not be good enough. And that's what it's been like probably in the last 3 or 4 games or so, although Bournemouth wasn't so bad. But you know, that grates and hurts. And obviously, if that then happens at Carrow Road, 27,000 people, 25,000 home fans, you know, a few of them are not going to be particularly happy seeing their side really struggle. And you obviously then get negativity from that. And it becomes a really long season. But I know how hard Norwich are trying to build something that means that, you know, I hate to say it, but even if it did unravel this year, the club isn't going to unravel. And I think so that's quite a different pressure at the top of the club to, say, Watford, who, as we've already just said, you know, they might end up having a third manager before Christmas, because they can't possibly contemplate the situation where they get relegated. So I think, you know, there are different pressures. It's really almost impossible to reconcile them in terms of the terraces, in terms of preparing the club for whatever's going on. Three teams in the Premier League this year are going down regardless, and the chances are that whoever it is won't be prepared for it. So I think you know, it's a difficult situation because ultimately anyone going to watch Norwich tonight will want to see them win and do what they can and be good enough for this level. And they will still, trust me, it will hurt if it doesn't happen tonight, and they will still feel huge pressure over the course of just justifying themselves over the rest of the season.
One of the big problems so far for Norwich has been their growing injury list at times, that the fact that they've had so many players out injured. They could be boosted by a few returns. Ibrahim Amadou is supposedly fully fit, as is Todd Cantwell, who was on the bench, I think, last weekend against Brighton. He hasn't actually been included in the England under-21 squad, probably, because he has been injured. But how important is it that the likes of Cantwell and Amadou are back in the starting 11 for Daniel Farke's side?
Yeah, I mean, the injury crisis has eased quite a lot. I think the question is now, those players who've been out probably for longer than Amadou and Cantwell, they've missed maybe the odd game in recent weeks. It's players like Anel Hernandez, who's played, I think, three games and started once, having been out since the opening game of the season where he only came off the bench. So him getting back to full fitness is are the things that I think could really help alter Norwich's fortunes. And the one I would probably add to that is Christoph Zimmermann, who, given Norwich have been so short of centre-back options, is one they could desperately do with coming back the other side of the international break. I mean, the thing about Ibrahim Amadou is he's done pretty well, but the guy was signed to be their holding midfielder and he hasn't actually played there yet because Norwich have had one fit centre-back. So that's the sort of issue that Norwich had to cancel. So I think Todd had a really, really positive impact early in the season. And it's always the same with any young player breaking through. And to be fair to Todd, he hasn't played a lot of senior football. He didn't really play a lot last year. You know, he's still trying to find a level of consistency. And he will probably come in waves for Norwich over the course of this year. But it is, I think, having competition and having as many options available is really important for Daniel, because he needs to figure out the ones that are going to work and he needs to adapt what Norwich are doing. And you can only do that if he's got personnel to adapt with it. And I'd probably then add Mario Vrančić coming back the other side of the break would be good as well. And he might be on the bench tonight. But ultimately, Daniel will probably have to tweak it regardless of personnel. It will be more a question of how they go about it.
Even though, as we just mentioned, Todd Cantwell isn't in the England under 21 squad, both Max Ahrens and also Ben Godfrey have been picked in that squad. And you mentioned about the club being prepared for kind of, I suppose, a bit of sustainability, that it's not just for this season trying to keep themselves up. It's the long-term project at Norwich, making sure that there's stability from top to bottom. Does this highlight that, I know Cantwell's not in there, maybe because of injury, but in theory, Norwich could have had three players in the England under 21 squad. That shows that from the bottom, from the academy, that Norwich are doing good things, and no matter what happens this season, they're in a good sustainable position going forward long term.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's certainly the plan. I mean, I'm as sceptical as most people probably in terms of how you make anything a long-term success in football, because it can be very hard. And I think what Norwich have proven in the last 3 years is that if there is a player who is good enough, they will get a chance. Not only a chance, they'll get a sustained run and they'll be given the freedom to make mistakes and they'll be given faith to show that in the long run, they have the potential to develop. That's difficult because, you know, that could only be one season in the Premier League with Norwich, because it's such a ruthless division that the mistakes may end up costing them. But Norwich have that as a real key part of their philosophy, and it's not just the three England boys. You can see it with Jamal Lewis, who has been absolutely superb all season. Emi Buendia has had a kind of a difficult time looking at it in a lot of ways, but you still think with the quality he has that he can definitely come good. So it's definitely a part that offers a lot of hope for Norwich's future, and probably does play a significant role in looking at a football club and thinking, well, is it the be-all and end-all being in the Premier League and then you just jack off everything else? I don't think it's quite like that. And I think there has to be an element of something that's much more long-term for a club like Norwich, who, let's face it, they get the TV money everyone else gets in the Premier League and not really a penny else unless they sell some players. And that might be one of the results come, you know, the next couple of transfer windows, because their owners don't have the money to put into the club, and that's the reality of their situation. It does make life a lot harder for them. It's horrible. I sound like I'm coming up with a load of excuses, but you know, that's the framework Norwich have had to deal with.
And just a final one then, Michael, as we've been talking about, big game tonight where it's incredibly difficult to predict. My inclination would be, I think it is going to be a home win. I just don't see Watford being able to end this winless run. How do you see the game playing out?
Yeah, it's really hard because I think what I've found when you look at all the teams Norwich are coming up against in the Premier League, they all have such good players. Even a team like Watford, who are clearly dysfunctional at the moment because they aren't able to win any games and they're sort of in a rut. You look at the quality of the individuals that they've got in that team, you know, they've got more than enough to put away Norwich or away from home if they get it right. So it's really difficult. I honestly think the Premier League is such a strong division this season across the board. So, obviously I'm hoping that Norwich find some dynamics that they haven't had in recent weeks and that we have a really good atmosphere at Carrow Road and then they do something special, because Norwich likewise have got players who, when they are on it, they can beat, you know, arguably the best team or one of the two best teams anyway in the division. And I think that's the sort of thing that Norwich have got to find deep within themselves for what is probably the most important game this year.
Thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon, Michael. That was Michael Bailey, a Norwich reporter for The Athletic, looking ahead to what is a pretty big game. We talked about the mammoth showdown on Sunday at Anfield, but for very different reasons, this is an equally massive game. Norwich currently 19th. With a win, they would potentially only move up to 18th. Watford are down in bottom, and a win would move them up to 18th and would give them their first win. So it's a massive, massive game. Could Kike Sanchez-Flores lose his job at Watford if they lose at Carrow Road tonight? We'll be getting the Hornets' perspective next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've been talking about that huge game at Carrow Road tonight. What will be the repercussions of it, depending on which way it goes? We've had the Canaries' perspective. Now it's time for the Hornets' perspective. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Mike Parkin from the Rookery End podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Mike. As we've been talking about, it's a mammoth game at Carrow Road. What are your feelings as we build up to the game? We're only a matter of hours out from it. What are your feelings going into this game?
Yeah, like most other Watford fans, just been monitoring social media this week, Kieran. I think there hasn't been a sort of buzz around the game quite like this one for a long time. And I think the overriding feeling amongst Watford supporters is nerves, quite frankly. I think everyone recognises that it's an absolutely huge fixture for Watford. Norwich are in having a bad run as well as ourselves, so it represents a good opportunity, possibly our last opportunity, to get the season going, really. So yeah, nerves, excitement, as there always is ahead of watching your team in action. But the overarching feeling is one that it's an absolutely massive game and one that Watford really cannot afford to lose.
And I suppose the next question is it a game that the manager can afford to lose? If you believe some of the reports in the papers today, even Kike Sanchez-Flores himself knows that potentially time is running out. If Watford are to lose tonight, do you think that Watford will be seeking their third manager of the season, or do you think there might be a little bit more patience?
You can't count it out, can you? I mean, Watford's owners have proved to be very decisive when it comes to head coach, and they will be absolutely desperate to stay in the Premier League. Results haven't and performances haven't really picked up massively under Kike Sanchez-Flores. What I will say for Kike is that the shape has improved, and defensively, Watford have looked a lot better. They've shipped less goals since he's come in, if you disregard that sort of anomaly of the Man City game. So he has got basically the team was shot when Kike arrived. We weren't scoring and we were letting in goals. So he inherited a bit of a mess. He also inherited a team short of confidence, and he inherited a squad with a lot of injuries, and that injury list has increased actually since he's been around. So I wonder whether there will be a little bit of leeway afforded Kike by the Watford hierarchy because of that. But on the other hand, the performances have been pretty woeful. There's definitely an undercurrent of dissatisfaction amongst the supporters. Not so much because of the style of play, just because Watford haven't looked like scoring, quite frankly. So the games are a tough watch. I think most Watford fans would argue that it's worth seeing some attritional football if it means we're going to stay in the division. But we haven't been picking up the results either. So we're getting bad football and bad results at the moment. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled the trigger on Kike Sanchez Flores if they didn't win. But I think my take on it would be that he'd be afforded a little bit more time. I think there's just been too many external factors to make it fair on him to sack him after tonight's game.
When Flores was appointed, a lot was made of the fact that when Watford make these changes, and for some people they are a bit kind of a rush of blood, they tend to get that bounce, and they have had that the last few years. Was it inevitable that at some point that streak was going to end, and that can't happen all the time? And maybe even though it's worked well in the past, it's not a sustainable model to just keep doing that.
Well, firstly, Kieran, I dispute that it's a rush of blood or a hasty decision when Watford have made head coach decisions. It's not that at all. I think where every time they've done it, they've had a successor in mind, and it's been done for a reason. And every time, as you allude to, they've been proved to be absolutely right. And I think in this case, Javi Gracia's Watford were looking increasingly inept, quite frankly. They were leaking goals and weren't being able to score, and Gracia was seemingly unable to turn that round. So let's not forget that Kike inherited a team that was already in pretty poor shape. And to suggest that he was brought back on a whim would also be a mistake. I think the Pozzos, Gino Pozzo and Scott Duxbury have recognised that Watford are in dire straits. They will remember what a job Kike did when he came into the football club last time, which was to make Watford very, very stable and very, very difficult to beat. So to sort of suggest that there isn't method in the madness is a big mistake, I think. As with any, when it comes to football, though, we all know nothing's guaranteed. There's absolutely no guarantee that any change, whether it's signing a player, whether it's making a substitution, or whether it's bringing in a new head coach, is going to have the desired effect. At this time round, it obviously hasn't, but he hasn't been there long. I think it's wrong to sort of look and say this was a hasty decision and Watford are getting what they deserve. I know that's not what you're suggesting, but... it's been a tricky decision and one that hasn't paid off yet, but there's still time for it to come good.
I'm assuming, Mike, that one of the frustrations for Watford fans so far this season is perhaps the lack of success with signings. Now, I know that obviously you can't just judge a signing on 3 months, that you have to give them time, but you looked at the business that Watford did. They brought Craig Dawson in, which I thought on the face of it looked like a really solid signing. Maybe he came into what was, as you described, already a mess in defence. Ismaïla Sarr was seen as kind of that next step forward for Watford, spending a big amount of money. He's still, you need to give him time to adjust, but he's been in and out of the side, had injuries, not really made an impact. Danny Welbeck is now injured for a long time. Is that one of the gripes for Watford fans, is that one of the reasons why they're in this mess, one of the many reasons, is because the summer transfer business simply wasn't good enough?
I think there's been a disappointment with hindsight as to how those signings have panned out. I think Craig Dawson was unfortunate to be vilified by a lot of Watford supporters early on, because he simply, as a centre-back, he simply wasn't afforded any protection, and he was exposed week after week by an underperforming team all around him. I think he's actually in recent weeks proved himself to be a pretty canny signing, and as we all thought it was at the time. Ismaïla Sarr is probably the one that's got most people scratch their heads. You know, when a team like Watford spends 30 million on a player, you expect them to make an immediate impact, but actually, is that fair? He's a youngster, he hasn't played in this division before, he's playing in a side which is very, very low on confidence. He's been injured as well, so he's been out for 2 or 3 weeks. So that's contributed to it. So I think we've been a little bit unlucky with Sarr. And, you know, with Danny Welbeck, I think it's a perfectly reasonable punt to take a chance. I mean, everyone knew what his injury record was like. So we knew that there was going to be a huge risk of him not featuring throughout the season. But I think for a club like Watford to have a chance to sign someone like him, a proven goal scorer and an international, it was a punt worth taking. It hasn't paid off. When you add it all together, it looks like a disappointing window. But as I said earlier, there's no guarantees. When we went into that first game at the start of the season, I think majority of Watford supporters were happy with the business that was done. Defensively, they could have done more, perhaps. But I think it's actually the other end of the pitch, the creative side of things that hasn't really clicked. Kike Sanchez Flores has proved this defensive unit is capable of keeping it tight. So
Yeah, on the face of it, we could have done with more bodies, but we've had really quite an unprecedented injury issue. Troy Deeney, absolutely important to Watford. Etienne Capoue, last year's player of the season, has been missing as well. So two absolute fundamentals have been missing for a long time. And when you throw that into the mix, it's not hard to see why Watford are struggling, really.
I'm assuming one bit of positive news is that Troy Deeney could be back in the squad tonight. He's been out since mid-August after having a knee operation. Maybe a bit too soon for him to come back in. But is he at that stage of his career, especially in a situation like this, where it won't necessarily be the goals that are important, but his leadership, his love of this club could be absolutely instrumental if Watford are going to stay up?
Yep, you've hit the nail on the head. I think most Watford supporters understand exactly what Troy's role is now. He's not going to get us 20 goals a season, but what he will do, he'll be that captain on the pitch. He won't let heads drop. He knows how to get the best out of his teammates, both on and off the pitch. So him coming back, just travelling with the squad, just having the tracksuit on, will have a huge impact on the squad. I think there's been sort of word coming out of the training camp that the intensity of training picked up a notch when Troy rejoined the first team this week. So, yeah, he's absolutely huge to the club, both on and off the pitch. And, yeah, mate, you're absolutely right. I think his contribution is more in that captain talismanic role than a goal-scoring role. But we're going to need his goals as well. We can't let him off that lightly. We're going to need huge performances from Troy. And if we can get him, if he's fit enough to play tonight, that would be a huge, huge boost for Watford.
And just finally then, Mike, I know it's going to be a tough question and a tough answer. A prediction for tonight. I suppose that obviously we want a prediction for you, Mike, but would you be satisfied with a point, or is it all to do with the result, or is it partly to do with the performance and seeing a positive step forward?
Yeah, we need to see better performances. Norwich are a team that are closest to us in terms of what they're going through. So the confidence will be low. They'll be at home, so they'll be expected to get the win, quite frankly. I'd imagine their supporters are expecting them to turn Watford over. So there is a bit of pressure on there, and we all know pressure does funny things to teams. But Watford do need to take advantage of that. They need to turn in a decent performance at the very minimum, because draw has been pretty thin on the ground for us as Watford supporters.
A scoreline then, Mike?
Do you know what? I think it might even be 0-0.
0-0. Well, I'm sure the neutrals out there would love to see a more interesting game than that. But thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Mike. That was Mike Parkin from the Rookery End podcast. I'm sure all of us, all people around the country that will be tuning in would rather a game that isn't 0-0. Maybe Watford fans wouldn't be too devastated with a 0-0 draw, taking a point from the game. It would extend their winless run. But for all of us neutrals out there, I think we'd appreciate a game that didn't have zero goals in it. And we'd appreciate, I mean, if it was 3-3, that'd be kind of much appreciated for a lot of people out there. But it is a massive game. A lot of the build-up is on Sunday's game, and rightly so, at Anfield, between the top two, Liverpool and Manchester City. But the bottom two, if Watford lose heavily tonight, they're going to be 6 points, potentially more, away from safety. And could Kike Sanchez-Flores lose his job? And could Watford have a third manager by the end of the third international break? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, it's my favourite part of the week. It's Premier League prediction time.
Love Sport.
So it's our favourite time of the week. It's Premier League prediction time. I've had a message from Mr. Hawkins. He's locked in. He sent me his predictions and we are ready to go. Laurie is in the studio. Laurie, is this your favourite part of the week? Please say it is.
I know it's your favourite part of the week.
It's not yours,
let's leave it at that.
It's not yours. Okay, that fell flat on its face. Anyway, let's get on with prediction time then. So it starts with tonight. We've had both perspectives, Norwich and Watford. I think there's a real sense of fear, actually, for both sides going into this game. They're not looking forward to it. I'm going to start with you, Laura. You can do the honours of kicking us off. Norwich v Watford, which way is it going?
Do you know what? I haven't prepped this week at all. I just thought...
That's good. I mean, everyone out there is thinking, oh, Laurie's prepared for his predictions, and then he says, no, I haven't.
I do think I beat Charlie again last week, but whatever. I'm going to go... Do you know what? I fancy Watford 2-0.
Watford 2-0, getting their first win of the campaign. I beg to differ. I think it's going to be exactly the opposite, but that's what keeps it interesting. Norwich 2, Watford 0, and I think Kike Sanchez-Flores will be gone by the time we come around on the Premier League.
KK Sanchez Friday, that's what
that's what it is. Mr. Hawkins has gone Norwich 2, Watford 2. I mean, Watford don't score many goals. I'm just going to leave it out there. Anyway, on to Saturday, 12:30, Stamford Bridge. Frank Lampard, October manager month, despite the fact that Liverpool have won 10 out of 11 and are top by 6 points. I'm going to leave it there. Chelsea versus Crystal
Palace. How much did you spend on your centre-back?
Oh, that's such a lame, poor excuse. I mean, how much do we spend on the rest of the back four? Trent was an academy prospect. Robbo was bought for $8 million from Hull. Joe Gomez, $3.5 million from Charlton. Not exactly a lot of money, is it? Anyway, Chelsea, Crystal Palace, prediction time. I'm going to go. I think Chelsea will win this. Chelsea 2, Crystal Palace 1. I think they'll make it tough, though. Palace, Hodgson will make sure it will probably be a pretty dire game. It'll be like the Chelsea Newcastle game. Dire, I think, is my description.
Yeah. I think it's going to be 4-1.
4-1 Palace?
No, 4-1 Chelsea, obviously.
Well, not obviously. Maybe Palace might turn up with a few goals, although Benteke scored 4 goals in the last 2.5 years, but maybe he could maybe he will quadruple that tally.
I'll change.
Changing.
To 4-4? No, obviously 4-1.
So, Laurie's gone 4-1. Charlie's gone for a high-scoring affair. He's gone Chelsea 3, Crystal Palace 2. 3 o'clock kickoffs. I think this first one, in my opinion, is one of the easiest games to predict. Burnley-West Ham. Burnley 2, West Ham 0.
I knew you were going to go for a Burnley
win. It's got the Sean Dyche, boring but just pragmatic result all over it.
Yeah, I know. You always say that and I always bet against Burnley and then you're always right. But I don't know. West Ham need to get a result, I think. I'm going to go 1-1.
Do you think Pellegrini's in serious trouble?
Yeah, but how many managers can you say that about this season?
Do you reckon that's just emotion of fans just saying, oh, get him out, and not really thinking about who could replace?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because West Ham fans are at the start of this season, they were like, oh, we've changed, you know, we're happy now, we're going to be patient, blah, blah, blah. And it isn't actually that long ago that they were, you know, on the pitch, like, you know, screaming and shouting. And, you know, the thing is, they're just not that good.
There you go. Laurie said it. West Ham are just not that good. That's the quote of the day, actually.
Sorry, Tom. I can see you looking through the window.
Yeah, he's not very happy. Although I think he did agree with my prediction that Burnley will beat West Ham.
It's the same with Everton. It's like every season. It's like, oh, they're going to do better. They're not. It's Everton.
Laurie, you talk a lot of rubbish, but on this occasion, you are speaking absolute sense. So, up to your beloved St. James's Park. No, not down in Exeter. It's Newcastle against Bournemouth. Laurie, I will allow you to predict first. I wonder which way you're going.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for you to make that joke next week as well. It's the same one you make about the Stadium of Light.
Yep, and it's still good every single time I do it. Anyway, Newcastle Bournemouth.
I think we're going to win.
Scoreline, or are you just going to say win?
I think we're going to win by 2-0.
2-0, despite the fact that...
And Josh King will hit the post, bar, and other post.
Okay, so Newcastle
2.
For an
extra 5 points, I'll take.
Bournemouth 0. I've gone with a draw. I'm going 1-1. Mr. Hawkins has reminded me he just wanted me to read out his prediction for Burnley West Ham. He went West Ham 2, Burnley 1, so Tom's going to be absolutely delighted with that. He's just given... He's fist pump. He's delighted with Charlie's prediction. He's gone Newcastle 1, Bournemouth 1, as have I. Southampton-Everton, for me, was the hardest game to predict of the weekend. I've absolutely no way, therefore... I'm getting splinters up my backside and going sitting on the fence. Southampton 1, Everton 1. I felt that was the easiest way to go on this one. What are you going for, Laurie?
I don't know. It's like, it's one of those games where you don't want to back either team, but you also think both teams aren't good enough to not lose. Do you know what I mean?
No,
why I don't want to put draw. But it's hard. You're right. It's hard not to. Where's it at, St. Mary's?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm going to regret this, but I'm going to say 2-1 away win to Everton.
2-1 away, despite the fact Everton...
Yeah, I know. Tell me. I'm just going against logic.
Okay. To be fair, Mr. Hawkins agrees that Everton are going to win away from home. Southampton 0, Everton 2. So,
it's probably going to be 1-0, let's be honest.
It's going to be a dire game. I think that's what I think it's going to be. Tottenham-Sheffield United. Charlie Hawkins has gone Tottenham 3, Sheffield United 1. Sheffield United haven't lost... away from home this season. Granted, they've only won one of those 6 games, but...
They've also won unbeaten. More games than Spurs this season.
They're in 6th in the table. Top Champions League contender. No, I'm joking. They're not. Tottenham.
I wanted to ask you about that. Do you think that the top four, if,
as it stands,
if Leicester beat Arsenal, sorry, oh, when Leicester beat Arsenal, and
Charlie's going to message. I'm literally waiting for this message.
When Leicester beat Arsenal, and if Chelsea beat Palace, that's 9 points between fourth and fifth. Yeah. Do you think that's, is that too much? We talk about the between one and two, but I honestly,
I think the top four will be as it stands.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think you may be right. He's just said, shame on Laurie, plonker. That's his description. Anyway, I don't think we've actually predicted Tottenham, Sheffield United. Anyway, I'm going, I'm Denard, considered a Tottenham 1-0 win, but I went Tottenham 1, Sheffield United 1.
Yeah, I want to go for a draw, but I just think there's an outside chance that Pochettino might surprise us and keep a similar team from the week. So 3-0
Tottenham. 3-0
Tottenham.
On to the final game. We've already mentioned it. Leicester against Arsenal. I'm going for an emphatic home win, which could spell the end for Unai Emery. Leicester 4, Arsenal 1. Charlie Hawkins has gone Leicester 2, Arsenal 2. He's gone for a draw. What are you going to go for, Laurie?
And you went for what?
I went 4-1 Leicester.
Well, I can't go back now, can I? When I said when Leicester beat Arsenal.
6-0
Leicester.
6-0 Leicester. And I'm guessing by you predicting that, you'd think Unai Emery would get sacked if that was the result.
Yeah, I think 6-0 Leicester. They'll be 4-0 up in 20 minutes. Arsenal will steady it. Have a VAR goal disallowed on about the 56th minute.
You don't get any more points for predicting what's going to happen.
Just wait,
in the
when it
30
happens.
32nd minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay, whatever. But
well, I'm not giving you any more points.
I actually, do you know what? I said that as a bit of a joke, 6-0, but I can so see them capitulating. And I can also see Charlie texting you, but can't you just see them capitulating?
Yeah, Arsenal are going to absolutely be abysmal on Saturday. They're going to get destroyed and embarrassed. Anyway, we need to get through because we've not got a lot of time. Manchester United, Brighton, Laurie, go.
Where's it at? Old Trafford?
Old Trafford. Usually the first team I say are the team at home. Unless we're American
this guy,
football.
Or basketball. 1-0 away win for Brighton.
1-0 away. Myself and Charlie have both gone. United 2, Brighton 0. Wolves v Aston Villa.
Wolves v Aston Villa. Wolves. That's quite hard, that one. Because Villa always play well and lose.
Not a lot of time.
Okay. What have you gone for?
Wolves 2, Aston Villa 1.
Okay, I'm going to go for 2-2.
2-2. And Charlie's gone with an away win, so we're all gone for different
so
results.
So Wolves can break the draws record for
and
all season.
And then the big game of the weekend is at Anfield, 4:30, Liverpool against Manchester City. Laura, you can kick us off with this one.
I think Liverpool will win 3-1.
I've gone Liverpool 2, Manchester City 1. The news that's just broken in the last half an hour is that Edison has been confirmed out of the game on Sunday. Charlie has gone Liverpool 1, City 3. That's why he's bad at predictions. And our random game is from the Austrian Bundesliga. It is, drumroll please, SC Rheindorf Altach versus Rapid Vienna.
Well, Rapid Vienna sound good. I feel like I've heard of them.
They are a decent side, yeah. In Austrian football, not in general.
And Rapid Vienna are away, as you said, them second. I think they're going to win 4-2 away from home.
4-2. I'm going to go for a 2-1 away win.
I knew you'd
pick
2-1. You do it every week. So boring.
All right.
Just because you don't know the teams. Oh, 2-1.
Okay. Anyway. Right. That's our prediction section. Thank you, Laurie, for joining me. Charlie has sent me far too many messages to read out. I've lost track. He's gone nuts. I think he's like the world. He's gone nuts and he's just completely lost the plot. Anyway.
He's like an Arsenal fan.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what an Arsenal fan's all about. They've lost the plot.
This is Love Sport.